direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. We have 3 hours. No, we don't know either. We have 2.5 hours to spend together tonight. Boy, time is flying, isn't it? And if it's on your mind, it will be on mine. However, probably all the bumpers will be Neil Sedaka tonight in honor of his wonderful career and the sadness of his passing, though not entirely unanticipated, February 27th. And he had an amazing career, and a lot of people for years kind of looked at him as that formulaic period before the Beatles hit. You know, they would look at it derisively, saying, well, the 50s had great R&B, but here's the early 60s, and, you know, it was all the Brill Building stuff. But the reality is he was an incredible writer. And most of his stuff early on was with Howie Greenfield. And in fact, one of the last things he did was with Howie Greenfield. So we'll play that as well. But he was from Brighton Beach, born in Brooklyn. And his father was a Lebanese Jewish cab driver. And his mother was Eleanor Apple, was of Polish-Russian Ashkenazi descent. And he was developing a musical aptitude by the time he was in second grade. And as I say, his father's a cab driver. They don't have a lot of money. And his mother took a part-time job at Abraham and Strauss to pay for a secondhand upright piano. And what's interesting about that is he successfully auditioned for a piano scholarship at Juilliard in the preparatory division for children when he was about 7 or 8 years old, and he attended on Saturdays. And everybody, of course, had visions of him becoming a classical pianist like Van Cliburn, and he showed a lot of fondness for classical music. As I've mentioned, Russia had invited him over in the 60s because of his classical prowess, and then before he could get on the plane, they discovered he was writing rock and roll hits, and they canceled the invitation. But his mother was probably as dismayed as the Russians when she realized that Sedaka was discovering pop music. But she changed her tune within a few years. I think it was the five-figure royalty check for Calendar Girl that did it. And deal is, when he was, you know, junior high school, 13 years old, a neighbor heard him playing and introduced her to her 16-year-old son. That turned out to be Howie Greenfield. And he was a poet and a lyricist, not melodies. But the two of them clicked and probably became the Brill Building's most outstanding composition team, other than perhaps Carole King and Jerry Goffin. He actually had a crush on Carole King when he got out of high school. He graduated young from Abraham Lincoln in like 1956, and she was a senior in high school, and he just fell for Carole Klein, who of course became Carole King. And by then she already had eyes on Jerry Goffin, so nothing was going to come there. But he wrote "O Carole" for her, and of course she did an answer record. Yes, with a country flavor. Oh, Neil. Yeah, we'll skip that. And it was interesting that he was, as soon as he got out of high school, and he did have a lot more classical training, but he started groups. And one of the groups that he was a founder of was the Tokens. And the deal is, before they went on to have hits, he went out on his own. So while he was a founder, he was not involved in any of the hits. And so deal is, within short order, he was signed to RCA. And the first single was The Diary. And that was actually inspired by Connie Francis, who was at the time probably their most important client. And they were taking a temporary break from new songs, and Francis was writing in her diary, and Sedaka asked, could I read it? And Connie said, no. And after a little Anthony and the Imperials passed on the song, Sedaka recorded it himself, and that was his debut single, and it hit the top 15 in 1958. And then I Go Ape, not anything memorable as far as that goes. And a third single, Crying My Heart Out Over You, which didn't do anything much at all. And then here comes Oh Carol, and a top 10 record in 1959. And number one on the Italian charts. I don't know if he sang it in Italian or not, but in the UK, it was on the charts for 17 weeks. And so it was is a pretty big record. In fact, the B-side was a hit over there as well, One Way Ticket. And the deal is... the idea was for Carole King, as I say. By then, I think he was no longer as smitten. And, of course, Jerry Goffin's the one who wrote O'Neill in response, and it was a lot of fun. But he wound up writing between 60 and 62, probably 100 records conservatively, and a lot of them he sang, like Stairway to Heaven, I mentioned before when I was on the air and I was... playing at an underground station, of all things. When they said they were going underground, I thought they were moving. And, you know, they just said, identify the records and all. And here's one Led Zeppelin. And, you know, I make the fatal mistake. I said, oh, they're redoing Neil Sedaka. Well, obviously not the same Stairway to Heaven. And, yeah, made that same mistake in the 70s with Toby Beau when he had Angel Baby. And I said, oh, Rosie and the Originals. But Run, Samson, Run was a pretty big hit. Of course, Calendar Girl, which I'll say was number one, and that was probably the first big big royalty check. But Little Devil was a big hit, and Happy Birthday, Sweet 16. But his signature song was Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. And not only was it number one for a couple weeks, but that was one of the songs when he came back after quite the hiatus of no hits, that he did a slow version of it, which was just beautiful, and it was another hit. And Next Door to an Angel, and all that kind of stuff. And on and on. He, as I mentioned, Connie Francis, in fact, she was searching for a hit after Who's Sorry Now? And Sedaka and Greenfield were playing every ballad they'd ever written. And that's when she wrote in her diary, and hence, you know, but Stupid Cupid, Francis told them, you've just played my new hit. All right, so Stupid Cupid, and it was a hit. You can't say anything about that. But not only that, a theme from Where the Boys Are, and which was really her signature song, some of Jimmy Clanton's stuff, and on and on. And, of course, did a lot of session work, too. In fact, you can hear his piano playing on Dream Lover by Bobby Darin. And so much. As I say, the early 60s, man, the world was his oyster. He did amazingly well. And like all the people, he did it in a number of languages, including Yiddish. And, you know, the deal was that, you know, it can't get any bigger. And, you know, Alice in Wonderland, my favorite, of course, but many, many, many others. And here comes the Beatles. Yeah, and that pretty much did it. In fact, when he was talking about the Beatles once in an interview, he said, the Beatles, not good. And that's, yeah, after 5 years of hits, absolutely nothing, crickets. Between 64 and 66, only a couple of his singles even cracked the top 100, and not by much, although The World Through a Tear, which only got to number 76, was a great record, and The Answer to My Prayer was also a good record, but just absolutely nothing, and then so many things that didn't hit anything. In fact, RCA refused to release his new recording because he didn't record it at their own studios, and by the way, that was It Hurts to Be in Love, and he tried everything, and then instead got offered to Gene Pitney, who, of course, well, the money still came in for that. But the effects of Beatlemania were something that he did not recover, really, until the 70s. He did a few other things. Working on a Groovy Thing was his, Patty Drew, and later Fifth Dimension, and, you know, he did some of the Frankie Valli stuff and all of that, but it really, and he did stuff overseas, Australia, all that, but for the most part, it was absolutely nothing. And by the 70s, though, you started started seeing some people have interest in him suddenly, and then... By the mid-70s, he was back on the chart. Yeah, Love Will Keep Us Together, number one. That's right, for Captain and Toenail. Not only that, but a number of other things as well. So did well. And, of course, Elton John put him on Rocket Records, which was nice. And number of things, including that slow version of Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. And I always liked Immigrant, too, later in the 70s. But that was the deal. Some people in the 70s didn't know who he was, said he's an overnight success. I said, yeah, except for all those hits in the early 60s. And, later, he continued to record. He continued to appear, do a lot of concerts in a lot of different settings. And more than anything, though, was the reissue. As the oldies started to become big in the 70s, RCA started reissuing just about everything. And again, because he wrote them, he did very well, and he did a number of other things as well. And of course, you might have been aware, when COVID hit, he went onto Facebook. And by now, obviously, we're only talking about 5-6 years ago, whatever, he's getting long of tooth. But every day he was doing kind of a mini concert on Facebook, and allowing people to write in their requests. In fact, of course, I wrote in Alice in Wonderland, and he played it. He did it, which was just great. But could go on and on. And I know there have been a lot of obits about Neil Sedaka, but I think there's no way to overstate how big he was and what an influence he was in the early 60s. And he also, for a while, had some duets with his daughter, and some of which were pretty good. But he was doing well. He was out to dinner on the 25th, and no signs of ill health. Morning of the 27th, suddenly he's an undisclosed medical emergency. I don't know what it was, but he died later in the day, exactly 2 weeks before his 87th birthday. A life well lived. Rest in peace, Neil Sedaka. WGN Radio. Yep, it's my guilty pleasure. I'm Raleigh James, and I admit it. I love Alice in Wonderland, 1963 on RCA. And not one of Neil Sedaka's biggest hits, but as far as I'm concerned, I just adored it. And I remember driving back from Las Vegas once with Robert Woody Morgan, and I would always bring my cassettes, and usually it'd be R&B stuff that, he would either, ignore or kind of like. And then I brought something, and it had Alice in Wonderland on it. And he turned it up. He said, I've never heard this song. How did I never hear this song? I said, because you worked at hit radio stations, Robert. They didn't play it. And 1963. And probably it was a K-Make at Fresno. And I'll never forget it, because he called Ron Jacobs. Well, why didn't you play Alice in Wonderland? Jacob's had no answer as far as that goes. But yeah, he particularly like a Mad as the Hatter for Alice in Wonderland. But yeah, just I thought it was a terrific record. All right, 888-876-5593-8888-Raleigh. Cindy is in Chicago. Cindy, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about what I was going to talk about. I want to talk about Neil. Yeah, I want to talk about Neil Sedaka, you know. But anyhow, I had a recital. It must have been a recital song. It was Laughter in the Rain.
Yes, that was a big hit for them. By the way, the reason I'm laughing so much is when you opened up with I don't want to talk about what I wanted to talk about. Years ago, Hilly Rose wrote a book about talk radio, and I thought he had the best title ever for anybody who's ever had to do talk radio. And the title was, But That's Not What I Called About. And so I'm thinking to myself, wait, Cindy has just beaten that. I don't want to talk about what I called to talk about. That's classic. I love it.
And then I saw him on TV with his daughter singing
with Daria.
The duet.
Yeah, Your Precious Love was a wonderful duet that they did. In fact, that's probably my favorite version of For Your Precious Love.
They did, the one, what is that song? Breaking Up Is Hard to Do,
Yeah, well, of course, that was a signature record for him. And as I say, number one when it came out, the fast version, but then in the 70s when they did the slow version, it was a Grammy nominee, in fact.
Yeah, but that's it. And I guess I was going to talk, I think it's my meter for my sugar, because there's a lot of problems with the cheaper meters, and that's all Medicare pays for.
Oh, that's unfortunate. Yeah, those meters, as you know, have a wide variance, you know, in terms of what's acceptable variance. I look at that and say, you got to be kidding me. You know, that's like 40 points, 20 points either way, and they still say, that's fine. No, it's not. But,
well, you know, maybe this would help some people. I thought I was too old to do it, you know, and now I'm used to doing it again. When I tested my sugar and it was 222.
Whoa! All right. Yeah, that's time to seek help.
Well, I don't feel sick.
That's still not okay.
Well, then I did jumping jacks, and it went down to 180.
That's still higher than it should be, by a lot.
Yeah, I ate sugar today, and I got, you know,
All right, let me ask you this, because if you're on a serious conversation, if you're really talking about your blood sugar, what's much more important is your A1C, because that's going to tell you your rate over 90 days. Now, what's your A1C look like?
It was 7.8.
Ah! Are you medicated?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right. All right.
I was under control for 25 years. It was something happened with my boyfriend dying in the move, and I just...
Well, stress will do it. No, absolutely. Stress is probably harder on the body than any single thing. It really is.
And I was eating, you know, like apple slices and sandwich and croissants for breakfast.
Oh, God. Yeah. So you were a bad girl and you know it, but get back on track because you want to even that out.
Yeah, and I did it for years, you know, just little choices every day, and I did it, you know, my sugar. Okay,
well, hang on a minute. You've ended the hour, and we'll talk about your sugar neck hour if you want. And we got Marty in Whiting. He's got a request. It'll probably be tomorrow night, since it'll be all Neil Sedaka all the time. But yeah, that duet with his daughter with Daria, Your Precious Love, was a great song. Not a hit, but a great song. And I'll play it coming up on WGN Radio.
Just
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 1982 on MCA, and that's Neil Sedaka with his daughter Dara and Your Precious Love. And they actually did a few things together. And more recently, he did some things with his grandson. I think Mike was actually his grandson through his son, Mark, who is a screenwriter. But I don't know the family history that well. I do know the music, that's for sure. And we'll be playing it. And rest in peace, Neil Sedaka. All right. So I promised Cindy we'd be back to her and her blood sugar. So, all right, Cindy, go on.
Okay, 1 second. Like, my phone. Okay, there. Now it's all the way up. Yeah, what happened was my sugar was like 6.2, and I was getting it. You know, I was really doing it. My A1C.
Yeah, good.
So what happened, I got out of the resurrection system. What happened was the doctor said your sugar's under control, and we're not going to test your A1C, Medicare won't pay for it.
What?
She said,
like, that's crazy.
She said Medicare, she was lying.
Yes.
She said Medicare won't pay for it, not for every 9 months. And I think, and that's when it went on. It's just, I mean, I'm a grown woman, you know, but anyhow, I just have to be tested every 3 months.
Well,
me and Chase.
Take care of yourself.
And, yeah, and then... And then she went on maternity leave, and they had this other doctor. I mean, I had to call her like 5 times to get my prescription sent to my, and I just got out of it. I don't know, resurrection system. I think they were, I Googled it because I had this one doctor that would say, oh, Medicare won't pay for that test. You know, she kept saying that to me, and I Googled it, and doctors do that. They're in with the insurance.
That's
company.
Fascinating. All right. Well, I hate hearing that, but all right.
Yeah,
but you're doing well, and you're going to take care of yourself.
Yeah. And now right. I keep testing. I keep doing jumping jacks. It went down to 217, and I'm going to just keep doing them jumping jacks while I listen to you.
Well, very good. All right. You got to be doing something, and I appreciate you listening to me. And we'll talk to you soon. Thank you, Cindy.
Okay.
All right, so 888-876-5593-8888, Raleigh. It's another time when I say thank God there's no video on any of it, and certainly my part as well. So, Fran and Austin, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Oh, my. Hey, Raleigh.
Yeah, follow that.
Well,
Go for it.
one thing I want to say about that, and that is, you know, I'm now off of the diabetic medicine, and my diet is not that great, so I was kind of surprised that my sugar was in better shape.
Good.
But I don't drink as many sodas, I don't eat as many sweets, but I pretty much eat what I want.
Good.
But within reason. There are a lot of things I want that I don't get to eat, but I'll treat myself to something once in a while. But if you keep taking your blood sugar, they told me this with my blood pressure because I got a thing to take my blood pressure, and they said, don't keep taking your blood pressure over and over again because you're going to worry about it, and that's going to cause your blood pressure to go up.
Oh, jeez.
You know, and that, no, they were absolutely right. And so she keeps checking her blood sugar and checking her blood sugar and checking her blood sugar and doing jumping jacks and checking it again. It's just going to freak her out, and she's going to raise her blood sugar just by all that worrying and obsessing over it.
That part is true. I think the one single thing that is worse for our health more than anything else, and not our bad habits, but stress. Our mental
exactly.
condition so affects our physical condition. And, you know, I believe that from the bottom of my heart. I'm firmly convinced that my friend Carol would still be alive if she was able to adopt more of the screw it mentality, you know, but I couldn't get her to do it.
I've kind of adopted that lately myself. But
absolutely.
But I just wanted to say that, you know, if you keep stressing about it and you keep checking it every few minutes and so forth, and it's true, you know, when I kept stressing about my blood pressure and after the heart attack, any little twinge that I had, any little bit of gas, any little anything, I would have I would go into a panic mode. And I had to just, you know, it's okay, take a deep breath, relax.
Yeah, right.
Listen to some music. Do something to get your mind off of your heart or your blood pressure.
Right.
And it's the same thing with blood sugar. But anyway, that's just an aside. I mainly called to talk about Neil Sedaka because
yeah.
I love him.
Yeah.
I am crazy. It's like, you know, people used to kind of make fun of me in the 60s, but you know, I didn't care. I think he's great, and his arrangements and his lyrics and his harmonies and just everything. And I used to sing in some places, and one time I was singing his Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, but I did the slowed down one.
Uh-huh.
And this woman came up to me and she said, "Oh, you just made me cry with that." She said, "Well, you know, I love what you did with Breaking Up Is Hard to Do." And I said, "I didn't do it."
Right. He did.
I said, Neil Sedaka redid it in, you know, that's the version that I was singing.
Yeah.
Because she said, you know, the original version sounds too happy.
Well, it was happy, you know. But yeah, I thought that was a terrific record, too. And it was a Grammy nomination.
Oh, it's a great record. And I love that Alice in Wonderland,
too. Oh,
yeah. My heart goes pitter-patter because I'm mad as a hatter. How can you not like that?
That's exactly right. Yeah.
So, yeah, And then when I even liked the Captain and Toenails, Love Will Keep Us Together.
Oh, that was a good record. No doubt about that was a good record. Absolutely it was. And it was great. It was great for him.
Back.
Yeah, exactly. I love that too. But it was just great for him because it really made him relevant again. Nothing makes you relevant like a hit record. So that was terrific.
That's right. Yeah. And so I just wanted to call in and sing his praises myself, and you know, I just, as you said, rest in peace, and what a career, and you know,
first thing I thought is, I'll bet you he's together with Howie Greenfield again, and they
probably.
Were probably and they were such a marvelous team. And, of course, Howie was gay, passed away from AIDS many, many years ago, one of the early cases, and that was so sad. And I remember at the time thinking, I sure hope that Neil lives a long and fruitful life, and he did. So that was tremendous. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anyway, I guess that's all I got for tonight. So
thank you for calling. I always appreciate that.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Okay, 888-876-5593. 8888 Raleigh. Now, it'll be for tomorrow night since we're doing all Neil Sedaka all the time tonight, but Marty in Whiting has a request. All right, Marty, welcome back to WGN Radio. Marty. Well, whatever it is, Marty's left the room. All right, we'll get to Eduardo, and hopefully you too if you give us a call right here on WGN Radio.
My baby. If you think there's no such thing.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. Yes, 1963. Interestingly, it was a B-side. And the A-side, Bad Girl, only made it to number 33 on the charts, which is pretty middling for Neil Sedaka. And I know that many people, including from what I recall Neil himself, thought that that would have made a great A-side. But RCA said, nope, nope, the up-tempo Bad Girl, that's it. And so probably not until, you know, everybody's looking for CD stuff to bring out, did Wait Till You See My Baby really get too much attention, but it was a great little record. 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh Eduardo in Tampa, what's up tonight?
Hey, Raleigh. Yes, Sunday they had the CBS Sunday morning, and they mentioned Mr. Sedaka.
Yeah.
And so I was wondering, they mentioned John Elton, so is he like partially credited for, and this is my song here, Laughter in the Rain. So is he partially credited with,
no,
with that song?
No. What it was Elton John took an interest in his career, got him signed to Rocket Radio. So certainly it was a very big contemporaneous boost. But no, Elton John didn't write Laughter in the Rain.
Nope. Okay. Yeah. Because his name was brought up. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, he was absolutely a big factor. And he had been a fan as far as that goes. The lyrics for Laughter in the Rain was actually Phil Cody. And most of the time...
Phil Cody, okay.
Yeah, most of the time, Neil was doing the music. And traditionally, it was Howie Greenfield who was doing the lyrics. But some of it was Phil Cody, and including Laughter in the Rain. So that was the deal. And sax.
Oh, okay.
That sax on that was Jim Horn, actually, for people who care. And you know, the interesting thing about Laughter in the Rain is it was not Captain and Tennille who did it first. In fact, not even second. Peter Gordino released it in Great Britain in 1974, and then Lee Roberts released it over there as well. And so at that point, Neil had phoned Elton John to have MCA rush the Sedaka version to release, and so that was released on Rocket.
Yeah, thank you for clarifying that, because, yeah, I saw them mention Captain and Tennille on Sunday's show.
Yeah, right, absolutely.
Okay.
But so that's how that was, and, you know, the opening chord in that was based on Elton John and Goodbye Yellow Brick Road. I remember Neil Sedaka said, that's a drop-dead chord. And he combined that with the melody that it was inspired actually by Alan Copland. Yeah, Neil was much more about the music than the lyrics.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, if you want, that'd be my song to request.
Okay.
For later.
Laughter in the Rain. All right. I can do that. I'll be
Did
happy.
Did you see the lunar eclipse?
Yes. I didn't see it. I was busy doing something close to nothing, but it certainly was out there. A lot of people talking about it. Was it visible where you are?
I looked out, because I'm in the back here, and I looked out, and the backyard was lit up. I even saw the cat walking in the backyard.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I mean, it was pretty lit up, so.
Yeah, well, I don't know. You know, it's supposed to be, what, blood red during the highest point or whatever. I wasn't outside. But
yeah. Oh, well, let me mention, so Sunday we're coming back from, remember I told you last week we were doing the Monster Jam, and we're coming home. We're close to being home, and then we got rear-ended.
No!
Yeah.
No.
Well, they got us on the, on the driver's side in the back.
Oh my God.
And the thing is that the person did not want to stop.
Well, of course they didn't, but did you get them to stop?
I think they were like 20 year olds or something.
But did
eventually
you get them to stop? Did you find out who it is so somebody will be able to take responsibility?
We did get
for
them
this?
To stop. Yeah, I don't know what that was. I don't know if they panicked, but they stopped maybe half a mile.
Oh my God.
And we wound up on one of the same streets.
Oh my
That's
God.
That's funny. We wound up on one of the same streets where the accident happened. The cross street is different, obviously.
So is this individual insured?
Yeah, we talked today with Allstate.
Okay.
So Allstate called today, and yesterday I filed the report, and today they called and gave my version of the story.
Okay.
And sent them some photos. So they're going to be calling back either tomorrow or Thursday is what they said.
Yeah, well, if they're the carrier, they're responsible. And if you were rear-ended, it is the other driver's fault. This is absolute.
Yeah, it seems pretty obvious, too, with the fact that they didn't even want to stop.
Well, that really makes you wonder. Yeah, but thank God it was somebody who was insured, and you'll be made whole.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll give you more details later on, the days progress about, happens.
Nobody was hurt, right?
No. Okay. No, and my younger brother was coming with me because he was with me, too.
Okay.
He was driving by himself.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, as long as nobody was hurt, every time I hear about these accidents now, I laugh at all these ambulance-chasing attorneys that are out there. And my favorite is the commercial, I've been in a wreck, I need a check! Yes. So
so what's the story with that, as far as we're now I've been hearing rumors, I don't know if it's true, that they eventually wind up raising the rates on everybody regardless of
true, the whole insurance thing is a very, very sticky subject as far as I'm concerned, and it borders on political. But I'll tell you, the real crime in this is supposedly you have mandatory insurance, but the rates haven't changed since the 60s. And so therefore, in many states, mandatory insurance is $20,000, $25,000, and $10,000 for injury. In that kind of situation, you can't pay for somebody's car. So as far as I'm concerned, that's not insured when they say that. But the reason politicians don't want to raise the limits is they know state politicians we're talking about here, is that they know that their constituents don't want it to happen. But the bottom line is the idea that we have mandatory insurance is a joke when the minimum doesn't even have to replace somebody's car.
Okay.
And you have just run into the news, so keep me posted.
Okay, Raleigh, call back again tomorrow, Thursday. Thank you very much.
Thanks, yeah, and no insurance policy for that, so I'll just stop talking, and they'll start on WGN Radio.
When the day is dawning on a Texas Sunday morning, how I long to be there with Marie, who's waiting for me there. Every lonely city where I hang my hat ain't as half as pretty as where my baby's at. Is this the way to Amarillo? Every night I've been hugging my pillow, dreaming dreams of Amarillo and sweet Marie. There's a church bell ringing, hear the sound of joy that it's singing for the sweet Maria and the guy who's coming to see her. Just beyond the highway lies an open plain, and it keeps me going, yeah.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James, and that's Neil Sedaka from 1977 on Rocket Records. He and Phil Cody. Amarillo got all the way up to number 44, but I played it. In fact, it's funny. He actually mailed me a postcard. He was appearing in Las Vegas at one of the showrooms, and I guess he had read, the Gavin Report or one of those publications where it said what records you added that week. And he actually took time to send me a postcard thanking me for adding Amarillo. And I don't think too many other people did, but believe me, if it said Neil Sedaka on it, I wouldn't care if he was reading his laundry list. And so, I actually liked it. So 888-876-5593. Now, let me, I don't know. I'm going to try Marty again to see if, now, Marty, are you there? No, I guess we have lost Marty. All right, so we'll actually release that line and instead talk to Mike in Elmwood Park. What's up, Mike?
Hi, Raleigh. Yeah, I have the record Bad Blood, which has Elton John on it.
Sure.
That was I do have the album Sadaka Is Back. That is a good album.
Sure.
A very good album.
Yeah, no, Bad Blood was number one for 3 weeks. And that was, of course, on Rocket in 75. You know, all that stuff on Rocket, of course, you know, mentioned Laughter in the Rain and The Immigrant, and That's When the Music Takes Me, and Bad Blood and all that. And right after Bad Blood, that's when he did the slow version of Breaking Up Is Hard to Do.
I think that's on a two. I'd have to look. I do have the album. I have to look on it. But, yeah, I like the slow version of that, too.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. You know,
oh, yeah, I did too. I was very surprised when that came out. I loved it. Well, I mentioned Amarillo wasn't on Rocket, by the way. It was on Elektra. It was the first thing he had on Elektra. All right, but anyway, back to that. Yes, Bad Blood was a big hit, and Elton John was instrumental in getting him a record label and someone who could do distribution and all that, and that was tremendous.
I mean, I remember listening when I was a kid. When my mom used to have LS on, and they'd play Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, the original.
Oh, of course.
I remember that.
Well, that was was a number one record for him.
You
know, sure was. That was one of his biggest hits ever.
But, you know, it's nice that he stuck around for a while, you know.
Well, he obviously hit some real downtime as far as pop music, but again, he was a classical musician. He even composed some classical stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I am not a classical fan, so I hated all that stuff, but he not only loved it, he really contributed to the art form, and it was important to him. And also in some of the leaner years, he still made appearances, you know, sometimes on the oldie circuit and stuff like that. So, you know, and when you've written all that stuff and so many things, you know, there would never be a pity party for Neil Sedaka. He was, you know, wealthy beyond belief because of that. Writing is the key.
I remember him being on the Mike Douglas show, and he showed Mike Douglas and whoever was on that show how he went about doing it, you know, with the multi-tracks.
Yeah.
He explained it to him.
Sure.
This is how we recorded, you know, Breaking Up Is Hard to Do, or Next Door to an Angel. He explained that, how, you know, multi-tracking. It was interesting.
Well, right, and that was very rudimentary back then, you know, as far as that goes. And you can listen to the overlays in some of those records. It's very obvious what they were doing. But there were good production values in that whole, everything Donnie Kirshner did had good production values, the Brill Building stuff. And, you know, none of it was over-modulated. I mean, like last night when I was playing some really great obscure soul, the killer was, most of it was so over-modulated, no one could play it on the radio. And and Donnie Kirshner did not stand for that. And so it was all well done.
Yeah. Well, like I say, I enjoyed his music. I still do.
Yeah.
You know,
he would have been 87 years old, so it was a life well lived. And, you know, to be,
You
know, the day before he's out and about and having dinner out and all that. So, man, that's the way to die. You know, just, whoops, got to go.
Yeah. Yep. But other than that, I enjoy your show, though. I really do.
Well, it's always good to hear from you, Mike. Thank you for calling.
You're welcome. You all take care.
You too. Bye. So 888-876-5593, 8888. Raleigh, if it's on your mind, it's on mine. And you don't have to talk about Neil Sedaka. You know, you can talk about anything you want, providing it has no political or social import whatsoever. Yeah, there's so many other places you can hear that now, everywhere ad nauseum. And that's fine. You can get your fill there. But if you want to avoid that, we'll talk about nothing. I tend to actually excel in nothing. So as I mentioned, an eclipse. Now, of course, to those who are astronomically minded, eclipses are interesting because, of course, if you can view them, if it's a clear sky and you're in range for the eclipse, especially the one tonight, you know, it can be quite the celestial show, and that's great. Astrologers look at eclipses a little differently. And the interesting thing about that, more than anything about any eclipse that you hear astrologically is it's a timing indicator. In other words, things that otherwise are in the chart might come to fruition. The eclipse may be the factor that pushes it. And so that's why they're interested in that. And of course, depending upon the sign and also the aspects made to planets, it may have more or less meaning. But more than anything, it's a timing indicator. So today was, and I have to look because I think we're in the middle of eclipse season now anyway. So I'll take a look and tell you what's coming next. Coming up on WGN Radio.
Tell me that you're leaving. I can't believe it's true. Girl, there's just no living without you. Don't take your love away from me. Don't you leave my heart in misery. 'Cause if you go, then I'll be blue. Breaking up is hard to do. Remember when you held me tight and you kissed me all through the night. Think of all that we've been through. And breaking up is hard to do. Say that breaking up is hard to do. Now I know that it's true. Don't say that this is the end. Instead of breaking up, I wish that we were making up again. I beg of you, don't say goodbye.
WGN Radio. Raleigh James didn't make it to number one. Close, did get a Grammy nomination. And of course, the original of Fast Version, kind of a signature song for Neil Sedaka. So Neil Sedaka and Howie Greenfield. Yes. Howie was still alive at that point. Howie didn't die until, I think it was like 1985 or 86. And as I mentioned, he was openly gay. And in fact, I don't know how he contracted AIDS as far as that goes, because he was in a long-term domestic partnership with a cabaret singer. And from the early 60s, really until he died, they had lived together in Manhattan, and then they both moved together to California in 1966. And Howie died just 11 days before he turned 50, I remember. And that's the deal. Interestingly, his partner died from AIDS just a few weeks later, and they're buried next to one another at Forest Lawn in L.A. And so, rest in peace to Howie. And now, sadly, Neil Sedaka is with him. Yeah, so now the total lunar eclipse, I haven't forgotten about it, and maybe after the news or whatever, maybe this hour, who knows, we will talk about the astrological significance and what it means about being in eclipse season. Robert in LaGrange, welcome back to WGN Radio.
Raleigh, I just thought that I dozed off a couple of times. I'm sorry, but I know how you feel about sleep. But yeah. The request that I asked about for Neil Sedaka last night, that you mean everything to me, I remember him saying that he took it from an old Jewish melody.
Oh, sure. A lot of stuff like that. Yes. And he was absolutely proficient in Yiddish and actually sang some of his songs that way. So you betcha. And so we'll be getting to that. I haven't forgotten your request.
Oh, yeah. I just thought of it. just a few minutes ago. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so we'll do that. In fact, we'll open next hour with You Mean Everything to Me. Yeah, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. Like I'm saying, not really the lyricist for much of this stuff, but the music, 100% Neil, who was beyond proficient. All right, so this eclipse we just had, and I think it's the only total lunar eclipse you'll get to see this year. As far as that goes, astrologically, what's interesting about it is that it's in conjunction with the South Node, so to speak. Nodes are not physical bodies of any sort. They're two opposing points when the moon crosses right into the sun's path, the ecliptic. And if it's aligned with the North Node, that's your future and future destiny and growth and lessons to be learned. If it's aligned with the South Node, well, that's your past life experiences, your karma, innate talents, all that kind of stuff. So say astrologers. So they're always exactly opposite one another. And interestingly, in most people's charts, the nodes are retrograde motion as far as that is. So that's what the nodes are. And to say that this blood mooon in Virgo, March 3rd, total lunar eclipse, being aligned with the South Node makes it a karmic reset, as it will, and 12 degrees of Virgo right on the South Node. So that would be culminations, closures, even surrenders, but endings of situations that have outlived their purposes. And so that's the deal. Now, it's on a Virgo-Pisces axis, and so that's about balancing the analytical nature of Virgo with the dreamy emotional nature, yeah, water sign, if nothing else, of Pisces. And Virgo is ruled by Mercury, and so you know about that. And Mercury right now is retrograde, right? So that strongly can impact communication, decision-making, critical thinking, and maybe a need to reevaluate. But more than anything, we see it as a closing of a chapter, and it's the third in a series of Virgo-focused transformations. The first one was March of last year, and so it's bringing a finality as far as that goes. So that's the deal astrologically. I'll leave it to you whether you believe any of that. But bottom line, as they say, avoid impulsive actions around this type of an eclipse, and focus on what you can let go of. Yeah, everything. All right. So now, interestingly, I mentioned Virgo, or I mentioned Pisces, and here we're talking about tropical astrology. Many people increasingly look at Vedic astrology, which is a different system used primarily in India, and it's fascinating because it probably is more accurate with regard to where the planets are at this moment in time. So that's sidereal. And so, you know, I leave it to you, but obviously if you're looking at it from a Vedic perspective, you're not looking at Virgo and Pisces in this case. All right, so 888-876-5593, 8888 Raleigh. And we have Ken. Ken is in Prospect Heights. Welcome back to WGN Radio, Ken.
Hey, good morning, Raleigh. How are you?
All right, how about yourself?
Good. I'm a bass player, and one of my favorite bass players of all time is Leland Sklar.
Okay.
And I just love his style and his attitude, and I follow him on YouTube and Facebook. And I stumbled across, because I follow him, I stumbled across a version of Laughter in the Rain he was playing on a video with Steve Tyrell. I don't know if you've caught that or saw the video.
Yep.
It's really great to see Neil walk into. It looks like he was recording in Steve's house when they did this video. It was a lot of fun. I just thought the version was really, it was jazzy, it was smooth. Just another version of the song, but I just really, it was so enjoyable just seeing Neil having a lot of fun.
He was. On a remake. He absolutely was. And 2018, I think, that album, A Song for You, was being recorded. So I'll see if I don't know if that's on this computer, but if it is, I will play it.
Sounds great. Thanks,
all right,
Raleigh.
Thanks, appreciate it. All right, so I don't know what I threw on this. And that's another thing. I've been, I redid all the computers for the radio stations I own, and that was its own set of problems because most of those have to be Windows machines because of certain software limitations. And so, Windows 11 and I are not best friends, but did all that and realized that, man, I'm all Mac and all my stuff here. And I thought, it's time to replace the minis. Yeah, one of them is failing in front of my eyes. And so that'll be the next project. Yeah, never at a loss for something to do. Steve Tyrell is another very underrated person. And not a household name, but certainly should be. So you betcha. And so, all right. So that's where we'll pick it up next hour. We got another hour to talk about whatever's on your mind, and I'll make sure that we do that and several things. Thanks, of course, to Engineer Bob and his extraordinary links that he sends me when he knows I'm looking for things to talk about. And did you know West Florida was once its own nation for about a minute? Yeah, things like that. Maybe we'll get to that or not. Plenty of things. But I'm trying to think if there was anything else. And usually, 2020 news, of course. I'll try to do that next hour and get requests for that. It's so well written, and it's actually news that exists and going on, but written in a shall we say inventive way. That's a lot of fun. So we may do that. But looking at the Chase's calendar of events, since March 3rd is rapidly coming to a close, I'd say in about 3 minutes. Well, you know you're in trouble when the big event is Bonza Bottler Day. I'll explain later, coming up on WGN Radio. Happy way I feel inside. WGN Radio, I'm Raleigh James. Well, there it is. That's what Ken was talking about. The album is That Love and Feeling, and the video is done at his house, Steve Tyrell. And, yeah, you will see Leland Sklar on that and many others. And that's if you don't have that album, 2015 it came out, and there is a ton of good stuff on that. So, yeah, 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, and we get an update from Jim in Richmond. So, Jim, welcome back to WGN Radio. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I want to say the music tonight has been fantastic because I know all of them.
Of course. They were all hits.
Right. And then number two is, what else could go wrong?
Uh-oh.
I went to the doctor yesterday, and then she found that I have a hemorrhoid.
All right, well, that's painful, but nobody's died from one, so all right.
Right. And then I told her that my left breast all around the nipple, if you touch it, it hurts like heck.
Uh-huh.
And so she's feeling all around. I says, alone, it's like a 1 or a 2, but when you touch it or go near it, it's like a 7 or 8. And then she says to me, well, you, don't worry, because breast cancer isn't painful.
Well, by the way, it can be, but it's
right.
but pain is not a symptom. And normally, if you were talking about lymph nodes, you would be more concerned about underarm groups and things of that nature.
Right, but she said there was one there, and she was looking under my arm. She was looking all over my. Mm-hmm. This was on my left side, my left arm, and everything. She couldn't find a sore or anything that would cause. So she said to put.
To put what? Oh, no. Are you still there, Jim? It seems like you were.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You said to put, and then you died out. There's a carry on from that part of the
right.
sentence.
Right. She said to put warm compresses on it. I think that's the word she used.
Okay.
And then she says, and then call me in 2 weeks to see if it went down. Then we'll do an ultrasound.
Right. That's pretty standard, actually, the 2 week period to see what's going on with that. And obviously, if you do have a lymph node issue near a nipple, it's going to drain into the axillary nodes, you know, the stuff under your arms and stuff like that. And so,
right.
So sure, but you know, it probably probably is not an issue. But you're absolutely right to watch it and go to the doctor on it.
Right. And then I said, should I come back in 2 weeks? Oh, no, call us and just give us an update.
Right, right. And hopefully you'll just be calling and saying everything's fine.
Right. And then what we talked about before about debit cards.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And I use my debit card for grocery shopping so I could get cash back.
I wouldn't.
Right? Well, that's how I... Can
yeah, but I mean, you can get you can get cash back on credit cards too, depending on which credit cards you use.
Right, but they hit me again.
Well,
not only me, a whole bunch of people at the bank.
Right, I don't have a lot of sympathy for this. I'm telling you, don't use debit cards.
Right, but it came from Europe.
It doesn't matter where it comes from. The reason I'm saying it, and for anybody who hasn't heard me say this in the past, you do not have the same protections with a debit card that you have with a credit card. With a credit card, the most you're going to be out is $50 if when you discover the problem, you report it. With a debit card, you may never get a dime back. That's up to the mercy of the bank. So I do not advise using them, and if you do choose to use them, fine, but I have no sympathy for you.
Right, but they didn't get access to my account. But they froze my account to get me a new debit card.
Right.
so because they didn't want anything more to happen.
Yeah.
But I can't believe that somebody in Europe is trying to.
It's very easy. That's going to happen more and more. You have absolutely no idea. The level of cyber theft today is almost non-existent compared to where it's going.
Mm-hmm.
So
and then I have one last comment.
Yeah.
I've been type 1 diabetic and on insulin since 79.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've always told is if your blood sugar is 200 and above, you do not exercise because it will only raise your blood sugar.
Well, there's good advice. But by the way, when you mention your type 1, of course, as you know, this is a completely different disorder than type 2. Completely different. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm sorry that they carry the same name. They used to call type 1 juvenile diabetes, but of course you can contract it as an adult. I don't care what the situation is. When you're looking at blood sugar levels of 200, you need to be under a doctor's care and follow their advice.
Right, and don't exercise because that's only going to raise it up.
Well, there.
That's what they were teaching us.
There you go. Well, again, I can't speak to it. I don't know. But what I do know is that it's not the kind of thing to just take in stride and say, oh, well, this won't be a problem. Well, maybe it will. Get to the doctor. Yeah.
Right. And tomorrow we talk to the life insurance people.
Oh, okay. That'll be fun.
So we'll find out what they're talking about.
Okay.
And I thank you very much. And I love the music. I'm waiting to hear more.
All right. Well,
and
you will.
I hope you guys have a wonderful evening.
All right. You too. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right. So 888-876-5593. Yes, I haven't forgotten about all your requests that aren't Neil Sedaka, but I figured, you know, at the very least, we should at least spend one night as a tribute to Neil, because he gave us so much. And I'll try to, I will absolutely, in fact, I'll play Robert's request next. And then for the last two, I'll try to find things that you don't hear too often. And we'll take it from there. But if it's on your mind, it'll be on mine. Does not have to be about Neil Sedaka. Anything will do. Otherwise, I'm not running out of things, as I mentioned. You may know that March 3rd, now past tense, was Bonds a Bottler Day. And in case you don't know, that happens every month. Details coming up on WGN Radio.
You are the answer to my lonely prayer. You are an angel from above. I was so lonely till you came to me with the wonder of your love. I don't know how I ever lived before. You are my life, my destiny. To me, if you should ever, ever go away, there would be lonely tears to cry. The sun above would never shine again. There would be teardrops in the sky.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. That was an A-side in 1963. Although I thought the B-side, Run Samson Run, was a better record. But he'd sing it occasionally, Neil Sedaka would sing it occasionally in concert. And there was a 1968 live version that really gained a lot of attention. People talked about it. Underrated gem. And of course, compared it a lot to Paul Anka, You Are My Destiny and all that. But yeah, I'll take Run Samson Run any day of the week. But that's not what Robert wanted to hear. So, indeed, You Mean Everything to Me, there you go. Yeah, I'll pick a couple that are maybe obscure. I don't know. I'm not 100% sure yet, but we'll do a couple more. And then any other night of the week, we can continue to do Neil Sedaka records, because, as I say, I just thought the world of him. And very sad to hear that he passed, but very glad to know the circumstance, because let's face it, nobody has ever said, "Dear Lord, let me linger." You know, feeling absolutely fine, waking up and just dying, that's the way to do it, as far as that goes. So rest in peace, Neil Sedaka. So other than that, oh yeah, I keep mentioning this because I think it's so ridiculous. Chase's calendar of events, of course, never runs out of events. They find something to promote every day of the week. Bonsler Bottler Day, which of course would have to be March 3rd. Why, of course? Because it happens every month when the number of the day is the same as the number of the month. Bonsler Bottler Day is an excuse to have a party at least once a month. And apparently Gail Berger is the originator of Bonsler Bottler Day, and she got a phone number for interviews too, which I'll spare you, but that's the deal. And as far as looking for other things of interest, I figured you didn't really care about the emancipation of the serfs. Well, then again, who knows? March 3rd, 1861, Tsar Alexander II emancipated the serfs of Russia. 20 million underrepresented, one-third of the nation, actually. So there you have it. What else? Anything else I need to tell you now that it's officially March 4th in Chicago? I don't know. I think pretty much, yeah, the lunar eclipse was, and the full moon, of course, was the deal. It's the 95th anniversary of the adoption of the national anthem. Adopted March 3rd, 1931. Bill designated the Star Spangled Banner as the national anthem, adopted by the Senate, and then sent to Herbert Hoover, who actually signed it. And so there you have it. But that reminds me, there's an Albert Brooks bit years ago, I think it was on his album Comedy Minus One, but about rewriting the national anthem, that is just classic. I don't know, maybe I'll have to pull that out and play it as well. Also, it is Purim today. And March 3rd is Purim this year, on the Hebrew calendar this year. So feasts, gifts, charity, and the reading of the Book of Esther mark this joyous commemoration of Queen Esther's intervention in the 6th century B.C. time to save the Jews of ancient Persia. And apparently Haman's plot to exterminate the Jews was thwarted, and he was hanged on the very day he had set for execution of the Jews. Yeah, and so began sundown yesterday, Purim. All right, so, I'm trying to think of what it was. A friend of mine who's Orthodox Jewish said that all Jewish holidays were just 9 one-syllable words. They tried to kill us, we won, let's eat. And that's about it. So why not? Sounds good to me. Now, other than that, speaking of words, we have 6 English words created by mistake. Yeah. Nickname, one of them, apparently. Yes, the idea of shortening names. So Middle English, the word for this familiarization was econame, which literally meant also name. The modern English word nickname was a misdivision, a linguistic term that describes spelling mix-ups over time. That's right. They screwed up the letters and it came out to nickname by the 15th century, actually. Abominable snowman, and that came from a mistranslation of a Tibetan name in the 1920s. A journalist was interviewing members of a Mount Everest expedition in 1921 and incorrectly reported a name as Meto Kongmi, meaning filthy snowman. The true name the explorers gave the Yeti, the Sherpa term, was likely a combination of me, meaning person, and Dom, meaning black bear. So abominable, meanwhile, is a Middle English word, of course, meaning causing moral revulsion. So, quite a mistranslation for the hairy Himalayan creature. Oh, sorry. Scandinavia. Pliny the Elder. You know, we don't talk about him every day, that's for sure, but he changed European geography. Well, at least the spelling thereof, when he called Northern Europe Scandinavia rather than Scandinavia, the sans the first N. His misspelling became so commonplace that the original name was left behind. So Scandinavia became Scandinavia, and that comes from the German word Scandinavia, which evolved from another word meaning Scadia Island. All right, so at the time of the Germanic naming, Scandinavia might have been an island. Yeah, because this is a while ago, Pliny the Elder, because the coastlines of the Baltic Sea have changed pretty dramatically. Syllabus? There's another one, right? If it weren't for a reading error, we would be checking out our... No, it doesn't really say that. Citybus, not syllabus. The word for a course outline originated in ancient Greece as citybos, but when the Romans adopted the word into Latin, they misread it and entered it as syllabus instead of citybus. So one of the earliest examples, Cicero. That's early, yeah, at Atticum, a collection of letters between Cicero and his friend Pomponos, someone or other. Yes, Smith, right. And within the next few centuries, syllabus was inscribed into the Latin. Umpire, Apparently, that was a mistranslated French word stemming from the old French nomper, meaning odd number, not even, nomper, in reference to a third-party authoritative judge. When it was brought into English, the initial N was incorrectly dropped because the word was heard as an umpire. The misdivision resulted in umpire became the official English word by the 14th century, and we're still saying it. Ingot, you know, the block made of a metal such as steel or gold or whatever, would have been lingot. And when it was adopted into English from French in the 14th century, apparently the L was dropped. English speakers thought the French were saying ingot, which means, of course, la ingot, which the L meaning the. So they dropped the L because they assumed that that was an article. So lingot, which was not an article, became ingot. Now you know. All right. Yeah, I know. Absolutely useless information. I specialize in. We'll get another Neil Sedaka song on soon, I promise. And we'll also hear from Mike and Aurora, and hopefully you two, Mark and Aurora. Sorry about that. Mark and Aurora. Hopefully you two coming up on WGN Radio.
Grass is green, like I've never seen. Sky above was never so blue. And here am I, no one standing near. It's a lonely world, such a lonely world. The world through a tear. Just last year, we wandered here and dreamed a dream that never would die. Now only me, hope it shall appear. It's a lonely world, such a lonely world. The world through a tear from days gone by. The world through a tear, too slow to dry. The world through a tear, the tear I cry.
Grass is green, like I've never seen. Sky above was never so blue.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. 1965 for Neil Sedaka. The world threw a tear. He didn't write it. Howie Greenfield didn't write it. It was not a hit. In fact, the last time that Neil Sedaka was in the top 40 nationally was 1963. Yeah, Bad Girl at number 33. After that, it was kind of downhill from there. And one of the things I started doing was occasionally, let's come up with another songwriter. And so the Allen Brothers, who were not brothers, Peter Allen, just terrific as far as that goes. Also no longer with us. But Peter Allen and Chris Bell had gotten together. They're Australian. They were not related. And they did that. But they also wrote The World Through a Tear. And it was RCA put it out in 1965. And I think it made it all the way to number 76 or something like that. But literally after 63 and the last one to crack the top 40 as far as 40 or higher in 1963 was, let's go study. Well, actually, Bad Girl, I should say. Bad Girl, which I thought Wait Till You See My Baby was a better record. But nonetheless, Bad Girl got to number 33. And after that, that was it until Laughter in the Rain around Christmas time in 1974. So there you have it. But 888-876-5593-8888. Raleigh, we have Mark, and he is in Aurora. So welcome back to WGN Radio, Mark.
Good morning. I think my favorite Neil Sedaka song of all time is Laughter in the Rain. It is well-structured and yet warm-hearted.
Well, it certainly was noted the return of Neil Sedaka because literally nothing from 63 until that came out at the end of 74. Yeah. And as I was mentioning, he wrote it with Phil Cody.
Yeah, and it's got a little intricacy to it. It's not your typical top 40 song. And I, in the last couple of weeks or so, I've heard it commented that the Sea Crane radios are built to last. Well, I have been inside one, and I'm here to tell you about a few things that show that they obviously took some trouble. The AM antenna, or the FM antenna, is mounted in such a way that when you put stress on it by turning it around, it will not stress the wire nor stress the cabinet. Mm-hmm. And so that'll last a long time. The AM antenna is a double coil antenna.
Yeah, the twin coil ferrite, yeah.
As you probably know, the coils have to be precisely placed on the ferrite rod or they won't interact the right way magnetically, and the radio won't be as sensitive. Well, I can tell you that they have got that whole assembly mounted in there in such a way that those coils won't budge, because
right.
not only are they glued onto the ferrite rod, but they're also placed in tight brackets.
Mm-hmm.
The speaker, I don't know whether the speaker cone is made of nylon or a combination of paper and nylon, but I know it's not just a paper cone because it doesn't strike me that you could easily punch it through with your fingertip.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's got durability. The last thing I want to mention is that some electronics have circuit boards that are fairly fragile. I don't know what kind of fiber they're made out of, but I'll never forget assembling a kit. It was an ignition mm-hmm. booster that my father bought from a colleague at work, partly because he wanted to give me a kit to work on. And I remember how easily that circuit board was broken.
Oh,
but
yeah.
The Sea Crane circuit boards, you could not break those circuit boards unless you deliberately tried to split them apart with your bare hands. They
mm-hmm.
are strong, sturdy circuit boards, and they are neatly stacked within the radio. I like to say that even a blind person could repair it, and I have done so. I recently replaced the FM antenna on mine because I ran into it the wrong way and broke it. But that's another thing about Sea Crane. They won't say, I'm not sure you should be trying to repair that radio. If you ask for a part, they will send it to you.
Yes.
And so they sent me an aerial, and I put it in myself, and I'm just really impressed with the durability and the orderly construction of these radios, or at least my C3 is.
Yeah, well, that's sort of Bob Crane's thing, to say the least. And, of course, you mentioned the twin-coil ferrite, and don't forget how that's used, because you've got to have a variable capacitor in the mix, and they do that very well. And so, I guess it was the 80s, maybe the late 70s, but the 80s, when all the radios that came out just had lousy reception. You know, you try to tune them,
it
was just garbage. And that's when Bob said, I could do better than this. And I think at the time he was actually selling time for KGO in San Francisco or something. But, you know, he said, no, I can absolutely do better than this. And boy, did he.
I don't think any other company makes a twin-coil ferrite AM radio.
No, I think you're right, because when you can do them yourself if you want to, if you're a hobbyist. And one of the things I always see when there's kind of like information about how to do it is it'll say based on the Sea Crane design. I think one of the first things that Bob Crane sold, or certainly was the first thing I bought from him, was the Select antenna.
And,
that was wonderful. You just put it in front of the radio, and
yeah.
uh, it yeah. was uh, It was terrific. No connection needed.
I remember that. Oh, yeah. I even had one stolen.
Oh, I believe it. And there have been others made since then. But, you know, Bob Crane, I thought, should be knighted for that when he was coming up with that. They were just wonderful.
Oh, did he? I think Selectatena was made by a different company.
Yeah, but he's the person who actually, I think, first brought it to the fore in the U.S. That's the only place I saw it.
Oh, that could be.
Now, the other one that I'm mentioning that's still on the market is the Turk. And
I've got one of those, and it works pretty well. The catch is that you have to physically connect it to the radio with two wires, and that's a minor design difficulty with the radio. There are wires in a plug that extend from the back of the cabinet to the front, and then to anchor since the battery compartment is in the back of the cabinet, they've got wires going to the front, and there's a chance that you could break those wires off accidentally when you've got the radio apart, but that's not likely to happen unless you just bend it around all over the place.
No, that's true. I think the company that first came out with the Selectatena, the company that made it, was Insensitronics, and that was in Wisconsin. They later came out with the Super Selectatena and all of that, and that was...
I didn't know there was a Super Selectatena.
Yeah, the Super Selectatena, yes, and that was in catalogs for years in a number of places, but boy, when it came into the C. Crane catalog, I think it really took off, but I don't know what happened to Insensitronics. I always love that name. I have no idea.
Yeah.
It was based in Hales Corners, Wisconsin. So I don't know. But
well, the magic of that device was that you didn't have to use wires
exactly.
to connect it to your
absolutely.
Radio.
Absolutely, absolutely. And you know, I remember when I had one. People, how does that work? I said, it's just magic.
But C. Crane's own double ferrite antenna you could attach something to it that would allow you to put it, you know, near a radio, and you could attach that little coil with Velcro if you wanted to. But they don't make that anymore either.
Right. I still have one.
Which is really too bad. I do too, and it works wonderfully when you... I mean, I also have the SkyWave SSB, and when you use that thing with it, oh, man, it reaches out all over the place.
Yeah, the problem that I've mentioned many times these days is there's so little that you want to hear. You know?
Yeah.
Get all sorts of things, but so what? Yeah, very sad.
And now the SkyWave SSB is essentially a stack of circuit boards inside.
Right.
And it tunes more finely than almost any other radio that uses its kind of tuner.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's got the fine tuning. It's got the fine tuner that allows you to tune in very small steps.
Uh-huh.
And somebody at C. Crane is doing a lot of thinking about how to design something.
I'm pretty sure that's Bob, because he lives for it. Even though he has sold the company, he's still involved in developing the products. And no, that was his thing. I mean, I know when he was first manufacturing in China and all that, he went there and he said, no, I'm going to make sure that these factories are set up the way I want them to be set up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and as you say, and as has been said, it's very durable. The first Grundig that I ever owned, Grundig Radio, was in 1972, and that had some durability problems. If you wiped it off with water, you might undo the glue and things would start falling apart. Or if you tried to do little minor repairs, you might end up breaking a plastic or wearing out the screw set.
Right.
But you're not as likely to have that happen with a C. Crane radio.
Yeah, the other thing is...
In some respects, they're doing better than Grundig or some of the other companies. What were you going to say?
The thing that I've heard people very successfully doing is they can disassemble and reassemble a C. Crane product and have it be just fine, where some products forget about it. So that's sort of nice.
Well, and they don't... they don't reflect what I would call design afterthoughts. I took apart a very good portable cassette deck once. It was a Sony, and there were several wires across the back of the board. And what that suggests to me is that there were design afterthoughts. And
right.
rather than redesign the whole circuit board, they would just use jumper wires. And you won't find that on a C Crane radio, because their circuit boards can be exactly the way they need to be.
Yep.
No jumper wires necessary.
Which is really nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. They're very elegant machines.
Yeah, and I'm so glad they're still around. Because, you know, let's face it, they had to go from a point when everything was a mail order catalog to, you know, most things today are just sold online.
Yeah.
And they managed to weather that very well.
And as I feel around inside of it with no eyesight, I go, wow, this thing is so well organized.
Yeah. Yeah. So may he continue for decades to come.
Yes. I agree.
Yeah.
I agree. And what's the name of the gal who's running it now? Jessica something?
Yes, absolutely. Crotty, C-R-O-T-T-Y. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yeah, she, you know what? You should interview her
on
the show someday.
I did.
I did. Oh.
I had her on for an hour.
Oh, my.
And
is it still stored somewhere?
Let me go to RaleighStream.net and see if it's on there. It probably is. All right, downloads. Let's see, under downloads. Come on, are you here? Oh, gosh, I don't see it. It might have been before I...
Now, is she an electronics expert, or is she more of a...
Yes, I did. Okay,
person?
Jessica Crotty. I interviewed her on, and the whole hour is there, on June 11th, 2025.
Okay, so I might be able to get it with a podcast.
Yeah, absolutely. You can easily listen to that. And so,
Okay.
Do that, and then you'll hear her whole background, which had nothing to do with electronics.
Yeah. Well, obviously Bob Crane wouldn't have gotten somebody incompetent to replace him.
Well, she was there for, you know, many years before. Before, so it was as far as that goes. And she definitely was an entrepreneur in terms of nature. So when she started, she knew nothing. But you can listen to the interview.
Don't get me started on the customer service people. They have a couple of techs there who like nothing better than to talk about the special circuitry and design features of their radios.
Yeah.
I mean, I've probably been on much longer conversations than the boss would want to allow.
Yeah.
But boy, have I learned a lot.
Yeah. So that's great. So absolutely.
Yeah, and I don't believe their customer service department was ever open 24 hours a day. But
it used
to
be.
It was always open.
It absolutely used to be.
It did.
Yes.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Hmm.
Yes.
Interesting.
You betcha.
Do you know if the slide rule version of the C Crane radio has any better reception than the 2E or the 3?
No. It doesn't. I mean, I love that slide rule dial radio, but it's not a slide rule dial in the way we used to think of it.
Right.
There's digital circuitry in that. And it's wonderful, but, you know, if you're sitting there comparing it to, you know, a Zenith transoceanic, it's not like that. So while I love it, I wish it was a true slide rule dial, you know, back to the analog days, but nothing is.
Yeah.
But it's wonderfully selective, and I love that radio, but as soon as you ask me that, I'm like, no.
But it's no more selective than the others are.
No, I don't think so. You could A/B it, and I did that one night. It's a great radio. In fact, that's the one when John wanted to go on a cruise and we had to, you know, go on a cruise. That's the radio I brought with me. So I had every one of them from which to choose, because I've got just about everything they make, and that's the one I chose to bring.
Yeah, I've thought about getting one of those on sale just to have it as kind of a toy.
But, and if you get it,
I don't know if it's worth it or not.
Well, if you get it as an orphan, you know, somebody returned it, with them it's in good condition.
That's true too.
And that's what I'd look at for that. And then it might be fun to play with.
And sometimes they'll put orphans on sale.
Yes.
And that's really
fun. Exactly. And that's what you wait for.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's the kind of thing where, you don't need it, but be nice to have it. And if it's inexpensive, get it. that. All right. Good to talk to you.
Well, I'm a happy proponent of Sea Crane.
Excellent. All right. Thanks for calling.
Okay.
Talk to you soon.
Good morning.
So, 888-876-5593, WGN Radio.
In the Bible, 1,000 years BC, there's a story of ancient history about a fella who was strong as he could be, till he met a cheating gal who brought him tragedy. Oh, run, Samson, run.
WGN Radio. I'm Raleigh James. I mentioned that was a B-side, and to you mean everything to me. But I thought it was just terrific, especially some of the choices of instrumentation in the background. It makes me smile every time I hear it. So John in Covington is going to close it out tonight. And let's see, why is the magic twanger not? There we go. No? All right. Welcome back to WGN Radio.
Hey, Raleigh. 2-3 months ago, I had a conversation with you about the song Solitaire.
Yes.
And you told me it wasn't a single, it's strictly an album cut. Is that correct, right?
I don't remember. It might have been a single, but I'm not sure.
Okay, well, at any rate, I just wanted to say, if I could request one, that would be the one.
Really?
Solitaire.
Really?
Yes. And then the other thing I'd like to say is, it's Northwestern basketball's senior night. It's their last home game. Mm. Okay, they're playing a Purdue team that's very, very good.
Okay.
But Northwestern is getting 10.5 points at home, and it's senior night, and the refs will keep it close. Mm. So take Northwestern in the 10.5.
Well, there you go for your betting advice. I love it. By the way, of course, Solitaire, you know, that was the album was called Solitaire in 72.
Oh, I see.
And so that clearly was an album. But I'm going to try to find it if they ever did pull it as a single. But it's from that album, Solitaire. But yeah,
okay,
I've got it. So sure, let me write that down and you will hear it probably tomorrow night.
Great,
okay,
Raleigh. Thank you so much.
Okay. So, did they ever pull? I don't think they. I don't know. I'll find out. Exactly. You start to get into the 70s, things get a little hazy for me. All right. So, that pretty much is a wrap. Yeah, I know we didn't get to 2020 news, but if you're listening on the stream right after the show is over, you will hear every word, which is a lot of fun. We thank Adam for keeping us on the air. What a trooper. Came in tonight after all sorts of dental horrors and made it through the entire night and didn't kill anybody. Yeah, well, that I know of. And John for screening your calls. And of course, above all, thank you for calling. We'll do it tomorrow night. Northwestern is, as we just mentioned, so I don't know. Might be a few minutes early, a few minutes late. We'll figure it out on WGN Radio.
Educator eats expenses, plus red flood wine and Chair Chuck chaos. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News. Real news, real stories, real fun. Faculty feast fiasco. Stake swiping school days on Long Island. An audit alleges a high school principal siphoned student club cash meant for mentoring into lobster lunches, boozy blowouts, and jet ski joyrides. Investigators say reimbursements rolled for years, with the boss allegedly signing his own checks while oversight stayed sleepy. Now lawyers loom, paperwork piles, and parents fume. Lesson learned: when the adult in charge treats kid money like his personal pantry, the only thing mentored is misconduct. Wine connoisseurs. Skelter Berry Swine is a couple of cork-happy crooks got a fancy French restaurant in Virginia to swerve wine before it's time. two wine slobs scammed a tour of the stocked cellar, and thanks to a bulky bamboozled bottle pocket prep parka, one of the booze hounds managed to hide half a dozen very valuable vintages and get away with the Pinot plunder. Side praise sidekick got pinched and she's in the pokey. The heat say Chateau Chamoway escaped to Europe with 40 thou worth of fine shine wine. Flying furniture follies. Chair chuck chaos in a Melbourne nightclub. A pair of punters pitched out of an Australian strip spot sparked a sidewalk scrum, then one numbskull nabbed a chair and clocked his own pal cold. The clip caught fire, flew fast, and, fittingly, fattened the club's foot traffic, with curious crowds creeping in for a look. That's right, a knockout became marketing. Only in 2026 does a flying seat turn into a full house. And that's what's happening. I'm Grant Marshall, 2020 News.